Brief introduction. Many of you, you guys were here last year. Many people don't really know that we had an amazing, inspiring person who was here in this building every single day last year, and he was kind of hidden in the business office. And really, I didn't know my first year, and then all of a sudden someone told me, Russell, this is Russell Moskowitz, and he was there, and his story is really inspiring, amazing, incredible. And we talked today. Today was the story of 9/11. We all know what happened today. But for someone to have, I know for me, my experience is in 9/11, I was a seventh grader, and for me, my understanding, my perception of the world on 9/11 was X, but to have someone who actually lived through and witnessed and was part of what happened on 9/11 to be here, be able to speak to us and share his story is something that's really incredible. So please, please, please give your undivided attention. Thank you so much, Russell, for coming and being here with us today. Russell came back, he doesn't work here this year anymore, but he came back especially to speak to you and share his story. So we're so appreciative and so thankful for you for coming. Please give your undivided attention to Russell.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Is it okay if they interrupt the questions?
Sure.
Okay. If you have any questions during my speak, feel free to raise your hand. If you have any thoughts. So I'm going to start off with two questions that may sound the same, but they're actually going to be two different. If my talk is successful, you'll see at the end why they're two different questions. First question is anyone here alive during 9/11? No. So the second question is, does anyone have a personal, quote-unquote, 9/11 story? Okay, good. So I'm going to ask that question at the end, and hopefully everyone will have an answer. You don't have to answer it out loud, but hopefully you'll view that question a little differently at the end of our talk. So I worked in the 79th floor of the World Trade Center 18 years ago. I worked for a bank called Fuji Bank. The firm took up 79 through 86 of the Second World Trade Center. And a few things just to keep in mind as I tell the story. First is that I wasn't religious at the time. I just started very slightly beginning to explore Judaism. And the second is that the idea of terrorism in America was refined or changed on that day. Like today, unfortunately, people hear a loud bang and first thought is it has to be terrorism. That idea in America was only a result of 9/11. So just to give you an idea of how high up 79 floors is, a few months before the towers, before that fateful day, an employee called me over to the window. He said, in the morning, he said, go take a look at this. So what we're looking at were the clouds below us, and you could see the shadows of the two towers in the clouds. So that's how high 79 floors is. So my day started off as normal that day, and then we heard a loud bang, and our building shook. What that was that when the first bang, the first tower hit, the other tower, it still shook our tower a little, and we heard bang. And again, people, we thought maybe it was a small plane. And unfortunately, there's been occurrences, small planes have come into buildings in New York. Someone said maybe a bomb, but it wasn't like today, oh, it's definitely terrorism. It was like no one knew what was happening. So much so that no one even left. We heard that, and we just stayed at our desk for the time being. I remember looking outside. I saw I asked this before my class spoke to earlier. You guys know what a ticker tape parade is? They don't make those anymore, no? You know.
Yeah.
Classics. Ticker tape parade. It's like a lot of paper. They shred all this paper, like tons and tons of thousands of pieces of paper, and they throw it off the roofs while the team goes through the city and they have a victory parade. So after the crash, after the plane hit the building, I looked outside the window, and it looked like all these small pieces of paper flying all over, but some of the paper had fire attached to it. But again, it wasn't like we have to leave right now. It was like something is wrong, but okay, let's see. So then there was a shliach, a malach, straight from Shemayim, who worked for my company. His name was Mr. James Arabridge. And he went floor to floor of our company, 79 through 85, and he told everyone to leave. It wasn't the management. Actually, I got a little upset today. I did a Wikipedia search, and they said on the Fuji Bank, they said that the management told people to leave that day. So I quickly edited, no, it was Mr. James Arabridge, who, to my knowledge, has never been acknowledged or recognized for saving hundreds of lives that day. He told everyone to leave. He experienced the First Trade Center. You guys know, I won't put you on the spot, but this is actually the second time the World Trade Center was attacked. First time, I think, it was in 93, is that correct? 93. They blew up the basement or the garage. They tried to topple one to the other. I'm going to do another quiz. I'll put you on the spot. How many planes crashed that day? Four. Okay, good. Okay. A lot of people say three. They forgot the one that they brought down in Pennsylvania. he told everyone to leave. He actually had spirit. He had lived through the first Trade Center, and I found out years later he actually saw the plane hit the other building. So he knew that this was not a small plane. He knew this was something major, and he went floor to floor saying, "Leave now! Leave now! Leave now!" I remember when I got to the stairwell that the someone also made a comment that at least the lights are on this time. That was, again, flashback to the previous Trade Center when they had to exit all the way down in the dark. And at this point, everyone was walking down. And it's also another thing to keep in mind how much has changed in 18 years, that back then, Baruch Hashem, there were no smartphones. People had these other phones. I had this big Qualcomm, you know, remember those? Those are also before your time. It's like this big phone. I thought it was cool. But anyway, so no one had, and people had Blackberries too. But the Blackberries, there's also like a thing in the museum now, maybe they can make a comeback. So anyway, we're on the way down, and people on the outside actually knew more was going on than us, because we were in the building, and so we weren't connected like people are connected today. So for us, maybe it's better that we didn't exactly see what everyone saw on TV. But we're on the way down, and everyone's just moving, walking. Probably if there's a fire drill today, the same way you would walk out, probably wouldn't run out. You just go in an orderly fashion. Then we got to the 44th floor. Got to the 44th floor, and this is the only announcement I heard from the official Port Authority of, I think, transportation is the official name, the only official announcement on the loudspeakers that day. And it said, if you haven't heard this before, this would be a shock. It said, "Building 1 has a fire. Building 2 is safe. You can return to your desks." That was the announcement that I heard. "Building 1 has a fire. Building 2 is safe. You can return to your desk." Someone I worked with, Alicia Levin, with blessed memory, she was safe downstairs, and she heard that announcement, went back up, and to get more backup seats, to get perks, and that's what she went on the plane hit. I exited the stairwell, and I looked, I walked over to the elevator, I contemplated, I thought about it, and for whatever reason, Hashem said, not that I really even knew Hashem at this time, not that I know him now, but I knew him less then, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go down. I don't have to go back to work. Maybe I just wanted a day off. I don't know what it was, but I said, I'm going to go back walking down. So I continued down. When I got to the 33rd floor is when the plane hit my building. And if you ever seen the videos, have you guys seen the videos of the planes hitting? So if you look carefully, or if you remember, first plane went in straight like this, pretty much. Second plane went in more diagonal. So the second plane pretty much took out all, I actually went online today, just confirmed, not so crazy when I tell us, but it does say even here on Wikipedia also, that the second plane went through between floors 77 and 85. So that's exactly what my bank was. Second plane hit exactly through the floors of my company approximately 17 minutes after I had left. As I said, I was on the 33rd floor, but I still felt the impact. I felt the impact so much so that I fell over, and for half a second, I wasn't even sure if I was alive. I was just with no idea what was going on. I got up. I realized, Baruch Hashem, I'm alive. And at this point, I have flashback to when I was about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 in secular Sunday Hebrew school. And the teacher taught us the Shema. And the teacher said that people say this as they're about to die. So I, like I said, I was not holding at all, but I just said, I'm going to start saying the Shema the whole way down. And I just started saying the first line, Shema Yisrael. I just kept hearing that over and over again. But what's interesting, I don't know if anyone see Rashi last week in Parsha Shoftim? Anyone? I'm not going to put you on the spot. So it says Shema Yisrael in Parsha last week. I'm sure you caught it. Fine. So what does Rashi say? Rashi says, quoting a Gemara in Sota, that the recitation of Shema, and he says in the context of Shoftim when you go out to battle, but I think we could put that into really any dangerous situation, that you say Shema Yisrael, you repeat the Shema. It's kedai that you're worthy to be saved. Your kedai means worthy, that you'll be saved. And whatever dangerous situation you're in, that by saying Shema, it's going to elevate you into a different category that you could be saved from the situation. And again, I never heard of Rashi at that point, and I barely heard of Shema, but that's Rashi's words 900 years later. I don't think when Rashi was saying that in France, maybe he had Ruach HaKodesh, that some kid would be saved by that in the Twin Towers, but that is exactly what happened. That those words, just saying it over and over again, perhaps is what saved my life that day. As I went down, you could see, as we're going down, the firemen were coming up. I'm sure many of which never saw their families again. I got to the bottom floor. I got a call from my best friend since 5 years old. And he said that, you have to leave the tower, something happened now. And I told him that I'm leaving the towers now. But he thought I was just exiting now. I was actually on the bottom floor. And then we got disconnected. So he thought he spent the next 2 hours thinking I was for sure dead. It's just also ironic that he called that time. Because when I took the job in the trade center about a year ago, we had a little disagreement. He said, how can you work there? It's the number one terrorist target in the world. I said, are you crazy? They're never going to do anything. He said, you're crazy. In the end, unfortunately, he was correct. As I got out, I remember there was a huge crowd of people in New York just staring up at the buildings burning, and people were saying that that people were jumping. I don't suggest you go online and see any of these videos. I personally, Baruch Hashem, I said, this is not something I want to see. I did a quick look up just to see those two closing buildings that I wanted to have etched into my head, my memory. And then I went across the street, and I found, like I said, it was hard to get cell phone service that day. Probably because the towers were hit, and whatever. But there's a payphone across the street, and I just explained to him, I was up there. I have to get in touch with my family. And they let me get to the front of the line. I got in touch with the operator, got in touch with someone. But I got in touch with my family. So someone got in touch with someone to let everyone know I was okay. I actually went up to my uncle's on the Upper East Side, and to explain what was going on in New York that day, it was crazy. Walking through the streets, people had no idea what was going on. Like, people would tell you that the White House was hit. People told you that the Senate was hit. It was like everything in the world. You literally felt like the bombs were landing on America. It was really, no one had any clue what was going on. But then, I got to safety and I ended up coming home the next day. I remember I lived in Hoboken at the time. And one of the saddest sights as a result of that was for like a month or 2 months in Hoboken. They have alternate side parking. You have to move your car, I guess, every 2 days, whatever it is. And there would be signs on the car that said the owner is missing. Please don't tow the car. And for like months, you would see these signs in the car everywhere, every street you look. Like, don't tow the car, owner's missing. It was one of those things that you just can't get out of your head. So, I mean, that's the story. Now I just want to spend a few minutes on how that day really affected my life. First thing I want to touch on is the guy who saved me. That naturally, someone saves your life, you want to reach out to him, say thank you. But a few days later, I found out there's a horrible, horrible, nasty rumor in my company that he won't be contacted. So, Yitzhahar gets to you, I didn't contact him. Mom used to contact him for 10 years. And then the 10-year anniversary comes, they made a big deal of it, like they'll probably do in 2 years, 20th anniversary, round numbers. And I said, this can't be. I said, I got to save my life. I'm not going to reach out to him. So, a few clicks on the computer, I email him, are you the same Mr. Jim Jarovich that worked at Fuji Bank? And he's like, that's me. So now it comes to the hard part. I don't know if any of you guys have ever have your life saved by another individual like this. I can't really put into words what you say to him. I pretty much just said that. I said, there's nothing I can say to you. I said, you saved my life that day. And he was like beyond touch that after all these years. I remember him. I reached out to him. A few years later, we had our 10th wedding anniversary with my wife and I. We just had immediate family, and we invited him and his wife as a guest of honor. And I introduced him as a malach, a shliach of Hashem. Really, just like the Malcolm came to Avram Vino, he came to us and saved us. And what he said was really amazing. He said that he's had so many hard times since 9/11, experiencing both terror attacks. And like someone said to him, but I mean, is it similar going to war? He said, no. You go to war, you expect certain things to happen. You go to work, you don't expect these things to happen twice. He said, no, that's not like a natural thing. So, he said that the fact that I reached out to him and was able to thank him actually helped him through so many difficult times that he was having in life, which is a lesson in itself that you never know what actions, and when you reach out to someone, you never know the repercussions of the impact you can make on someone else. Just a side note also that we've, my wife and I have made a deal that we've agreed that every Simcha and Baruch Hashem we have, let's say we have our daughter's bar mitzvah, this year another bar mitzvah, this year 15th wedding anniversary, every Simcha, the invitation says that him and his wife are the guest of honor. That it's just, it's pushed. I mean, without him, and we wouldn't have anything we have today. So obviously it's all from Hashem, but he was a shliach. So As I mentioned, real quick, I'll read you the letter I wrote to him yesterday. I hadn't received a response yet, but every year on 9/11, I write him a letter. So I'll just read you what I wrote him yesterday. Hi, Mr. Albert. I hope this finds you and your family well. This is always the hardest communication I make all year. There's nothing I can ever put into words to show my appreciation for you for your actions on that day. What can I say to a man that saved my life, permitted me to get married, have children, and every breath in the last 18 years? Thank you, but those words really don't begin to express my feelings. So attached is a picture from the kids the first day of school last week. That picture wouldn't have taken place without you. We hope you and your wife are free on October 17th to come to Bergenfield as guests of honor at our 15th wedding anniversary dinner with immediate family. Also, same thing for our daughter's bar mitzvah. I hope you're doing well, and as I pray for you every day. With much gratitude and thanks that can ever be put into paper. Russell. So, as I mentioned before, that I just slightly started the path of Yiddishkeit at that time. And I was going to some classes and learning a little. And at the time, now it's more conscious. At that time, it was very subconscious. That, you know, I realized, again, it's more self-conscious, realizing that Hashem had saved my life, that, you know, every time I would learn something, I realized, you know, life has more meaning. There's more meaning to the life I was living before I was religious, which I would not go into detail. But going to having Shabbos and keeping kosher and having different standards in life, it made life more meaningful. And then today, I was just on the phone earlier with my sister, and we always have a joke. I don't know. Does anyone else in here have a joke with their parents who their favorite kid is? You know? So anyway, my mom tells everyone today that I'm her favorite. So I asked her to put it in writing, but she knew I would use every day of the year, so she wouldn't put it in writing. But my sister said, yeah, I know you're the favorite today. But anyway, so I was saying to my sister that everything I do in life today is guided by 9/11. She's like, do you think about the events of 9/11? I said, I don't know if I think of it every detail every day, but everything I do consciously today, more subconscious after it, but now that I feel like I'm living a life of Ozer Hashem, everything I do, getting up early to learn, getting up to daven, making time to do chesed, whatever it is, I feel it's completely as a way of saying to Hashem, you gave me this time, and I'm thankful for it. And I said to my wife today, that one of the things I'm actually sad about on 9/11, besides, of course, the loss of life, is that there's no way I could ever say I did enough of the last 18 years to thank Hashem for saving my life. It's like, of course I did do enough. There's endless you could do, and endless more I hope I'll try to do. So that was one thing that it really propelled my life of Ozer Hashem, realizing that He had given me more time to live. Which is similar to the second point. So I always have a machlokas with my wife that she thinks, like 99.9% of the world, that people need downtime. Do you guys think you need downtime in life? Yeah, downtime is good. Yeah, maybe. Okay, I think it's very easy. You're either laying down to sleep or you're being productive. My kids will say that. I feel like you always have to be productive. And I think that's just one of the lessons I personally got from 9/11, that, you know, you never know how much time you have left. You know, you're going to do tshuva the day before you die. Death. You don't know when that is. So I really try and make every minute as I can productive every day, every hour, every week. Unfortunately, I always predict what I want, but that's my mahalak in life, to be a productive person, because Hashem gave me this time. I don't want to waste it. The second to last point would be to see the Yad Hashem and everything. That things happened before 9/11. For example, I applied to get a job at Cantor Pacero many, many times, and if you may know, they were in the first tower. They lost, I think, about 600 employees. Every time I apply, I'm so upset. I'm like, why didn't I get a call? You never, you know, and then obviously, when you see a bigger picture, you say, oh, Baruch Hashem, I never got a call. You know, other things, too, that, and these are big things, they're also small things, too. I remember in 1994, I guess, I got the, I went to my mailbox. I was getting a letter from Rutgers to see if I would get in. I was like, please, I don't want to live in New Jersey my entire life. I hope I don't get in. I hope I get in. And I got in. But you know what? 10 years later, I ended up marrying my wife, who met at Rutgers. So obviously, that was Hashem's plan. I went to Rutgers just to meet her. The whole thing was worth it. I mean, also even more recently, this is not such a big thing. Maybe it is. I was coming back from somewhere about 45 minutes from home, And I details don't matter, but I had a gallon of water that I spilled. And I had to clean up this entire gallon of water. It was like low paper towels. And I was like, I don't know why you're doing this. I know you know why you're doing this, but for me, I have no idea what your plan is. So I was pouring that day. On the way home, the exact path, I saw there was a horrible accident, car was overturned. And I was talking to my wife, realized that the police hadn't been there, which means the accident had just happened recently. So perhaps because I spilled out a bottle of water, I wasn't in that path. I mean, these are big things. Even small things like today, like this morning I grabbed something, I burned two of my fingers. So now all day I'm trying to figure out, like, what am I not using my hands for? Obviously, Hashem is sending me a message. There has to be something in it. I don't know. But obviously, Hashem is in here guiding me to do something or not do something in my life. Which kind of brings you back to the original question that I said. I was asking you if you were alive then or not alive then. But the other question is to, you know, what's your 9/11 story? I believe that a 9/11 story is not physically being in the towers that day. It's searching through your life to find meaningful things where you saw Hashem was guiding you. It could be when your life was saved. It could be when you were struggling in a certain subject and you had a teacher who helped you. It could be just a friend giving you some guidance that helped you. And it could be even day to day. It could be, you know, you had something bad happen and you know, you walk into class and someone gives you a smile. Or you get I get a text message from a friend or something. But whatever it is, I feel like those are really the 9/11 moments that anyone could really pick up and grab. And you can grab them every day. I mean, at least personally, I could tell you, then you just add so much meaningful and, you know, meaningful life when you're connected to Hashem. So again, that would be my parting words, unless you have questions, is to really seek out those 9/11 moments when you know that Hashem is guiding you. And hold on to them, grab them. And if you're upset about something, think about those moments. And remember that he's with you wherever you go. Questions, thoughts, comments? Nothing? You look like you have questions. Questions?
No, no questions. Just.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for listening.